is Scott M.
Thank you. My name is Scott. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for this. Thank you to the Atlanta Group for this opportunity to be of service and take some action to enhance my sobriety today. My sobriety date is April 15th, 2008, so I just celebrated 12 years for, thank you, you know, by the grace of God. I have a sponsor, name is Eddie, sponsor a few guys, and I do service, and, you know, in these times, I hunt for for places I can be of service. That's why I'm grateful to be here. When I came into these rooms, actually the Atlanta Group was the first meeting that I ever came to. Fortunately, they only asked me about my drinking. I understood that I had a strange relationship with alcohol, that it was causing a problem in my life, but it wasn't until it was hit home with, you know, questions like out of we agnostics. It's like when we honestly want to, we cannot quit entirely, or cannot quit entirely, or once we start, we can't control. I knew that was me. And then also those questions, you know, those tests, you know, it's like, why don't you step over to the local bar? I thought, absolutely not. I know exactly what will happen. I will get drunk. Fortunately, you know, there wasn't a person at the door with a clipboard saying, you know, like, how many rehabs have you been to? How many DUIs have you gotten? You know, did you wake up in puddles of this or that? And, you know, checking off, like, because those, to me, those are all consequences of, you know, of my drinking. So when it was presented to me simply, like, what is your relationship to alcohol? You know, can you start once you stop, and can you stay stop? And I knew the answer to that. That was no. I tried stopping on my own. I made it 12 miserable days. And for me, when I stopped drinking, life didn't get better. It got worse. Because then I was left with the pain, you know, the guilt, the shame, and the remorse that was just piling on day after day after day over years of drinking. Cause it was, cause I drank to escape. I drank to dodge. I drank for the quick fix. So I wouldn't have to deal with things. And, you know, these consequences were never enough. I wouldn't think of them. When I went for a drink, I wouldn't think of what might happen or what has happened in the past. It's not that I forgot. It just wasn't enough to stop me. And then trying to control my drinking, I tried to have other people control my drinking for me, you know, try to get the bartender to pace me, or when I'm with my, you know, with my girlfriend or whatever, you know, it's like, okay, help me only have so many beers tonight. But there would come a time when it was just me and the drink always won. And it became more important than anything. And it's not so much, I didn't even have the logic to weigh one against the other. It's just, that was the thing. I don't weigh, how is important breathing? Let's weigh that against other things I need to do. It's just what I did. And so it became such a part of my life. It became a necessity, and then it became my master. And like everyone else, I have to be driven in here by pain and suffering, that trying every other option to quit that didn't work. I thought that depression was my problem, and you know, I wouldn't drink if I wasn't depressed, and I wouldn't be depressed if I didn't have this stupid job that I hated, that they didn't respect me, and working, you know, for a public that didn't tip me enough, and so on and so forth. So when I went sought help for depression, the doctor in this walk-in clinic promptly asked me about my drinking. And so I thought that was stupid. But, you know, I needed help. So I would go through this process. And by the end of this, you know, intake session, not quotes, it was an intake session, the doctor wanted to check me into outpatient. And again, I thought that, well, this is a, thank you, 5 minutes. I thought that was, again, a terrible idea. So I just, instead of taking this seriously, I just went and looked for another clinic. You know, eventually I came to a therapist who, I don't know if it was him or if I was ready, but the window of opportunity opened. He suggested, like, you know, based on the, you know, what you've told me, I think you have a problem with alcohol. You can try it on your own. Or I've heard people have had success with Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some reason, I knew I was done. I couldn't stop on my own. It's like that something deep down inside me knew that I was done. And so it was just a progression of cooperation on my part of just saying, okay, somebody asked me, would you like to go to a meeting with me? Okay. So we get to the meeting. Would you like to thank a speaker? Okay. Would you like to get a big book? Okay. You know, I didn't have anything. I didn't know what else to do. And so then I just went along and, you know, was, got a big book, was introduced to a sponsor. You know, I did not dive right in. I went kicking and screaming. You know, I struggled through the steps. Just did other things. So whenever I, you know, sponsor a guy or meet somebody on their four step, I will say, there is no magic to it. There is no trick. You do it or you don't. And that's what I had to do. And I had to get it was too uncomfortable to do until it was too uncomfortable not to do. I was again at a turning point. And I was, you know, creating harms faster than I could write them down. I was building resentments faster than I could write them down. And again, I was in pain. And then pain drove me to the solution. And, you know, so in the meantime, fortunately, I had a home group. I, you know, went out to fellowship with other men. You know, there's a difference between the, you know, the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is laid out in the big book, and the fellowship, which is the group and the diners and the phone calls. You know, I also got a service commitment. And, you know, I was able to do my service commitment with a dark cloud over my head. You know, it doesn't say that we have to do this and like it. You know, willingness doesn't have to look like agreeing with it or enjoying it, but we have to do it. And, you know, despite my grouchiness and anger and, you know, judgmentalism, which, you know, can still plague me to this day, I did, you know, when I did the things they told me to do, the change started happening. When I didn't, I was just angry again. Go figure. And, you know, my sobriety has, you know, has built upon that. You know, I don't do the exact same things I did when I got sober, but my sobriety has grown to the extent that it has to, you know, my spiritual life has to be bigger than my alcoholism, because I still have the allergy to alcohol. You know, the mental obsession will come if I let up. There is no holding pattern. There is, you know, there's either moving forward or, you know, moving backward. And I just have to have faith in a power greater than myself that's bigger than my alcoholism. Thank you, 1 minute. So today, I'm living out on Long Island. I'm living in the Port Jefferson area. I'm going to school. Now it's online. It is very difficult. But, you know, I just, you know, go along. I could fight it and make it worse. You know, I'm living in a house with a yard. I'm not saying like that's the cash and prizes, but like I'm digging it. The deeper I, you know, dig into myself and the character defects to unroot that stuff, and the more I surrender to a higher power, and the more I, you know, rely on this power, like slowly but surely life gets bigger. Life gets incrementally better. I can't count, you know, like a minute, like, oh, yep, my life is better than it was an hour ago. But certainly I can look backwards. You know, it is better than it was 6 months ago. It's, you know, I feel like a stronger person. My feet are solidly on the ground. And so thank you very much for this opportunity. Thank you for my support.
Thanks, Scott. Our second 10-minute speaker is Christine.
I'm Christine. I'm an alcoholic. If you're new or coming back or sniffing around AA, welcome. You know, we're here for you. I was definitely someone who was sniffing around AA when I first came. Just in terms of stats, my sobriety date is September 19, 2003. Working steps 10, 11, and 12. My sponsors logged into this meeting too. My home group is the Agora Morning Fellowship at 7 a.m. on Saturday. If you happen to be in the Conejo Valley in California, please feel free to swing by and say hello. It's right between where LA and Ventura counties meet. I was a member of the Atlanta group from 2003 to 2010. And, I'm so stoked to see all these like names and faces that I haven't seen in like over 10 years. And so this is like a super treat for me and a super trip. That said, I'll go over generally what it was like, what happened, what's going on now. I really relate when people talk about feeling like they were on the outside looking in. I feel like that was my story from my whole life. I always felt, I just didn't quite fit in with like humanity. I just didn't feel like I connected. And, for a long time, I probably thought, I know it's because I'm Asian and I've got buck teeth and I wear glasses and I'm super nerdy. And like, these are the reasons why I don't fit in. Just in terms of my first drink, I was 16. I was with my sister and my cousins, and they handed me a shot of vodka. And I just sort of knew. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take the shot. And I'm going to wait for a feeling. And I waited for the feeling, and I wasn't sure it was going to happen, but I knew it was going to happen. Just fast forward a little bit. I'm originally from Southern California. I maneuvered my way to New York because I thought like, yeah, New York is going to, it's going to solve my problem. I'm going to be able to live life. I'm going to do the thing I need to do. And so I took to drinking like a fish to water. You know, I just drank just so fast. And I was very much like a weekend warrior. Like I maneuvered my way into like a full ride at school. So I was like going to school, working during the week, and then on the weekends just, you know, partying. And I thought this was like normal. And, without a doubt, it was fun. It would be a lie to say that it wasn't. But then at a certain point in time, you know, it was fun with problems and just problems. And I was the type of, like, blackout drinker towards the end, and I didn't even know what that was. You just sort of end up doing things you don't mean to do. You end up waking up with people that you're like, who are you, you know? And I guess kind of how I got sober, I was seeing a counselor in my third year of college, and she asked me how much I drank, and I thought that was terribly irrelevant. And, you know, I told her, you know, maybe 5 or 6 drinks a night, 3 or 4 nights a week. But the truth was, I never counted, because, like, why would you count, especially when it comes in, like, big containers? Like, you just don't do that. And she suggested that maybe I try a meeting of AA. And I was like, no, you have no idea. This is, like, I have a lot of family problems. These are the reasons why I drink. And fast forward a little bit, I started up my fourth year. I had gone on a week-long bender partying, and it was fun. And I was sort of afraid I did something inappropriate with one of my students. Luckily, I didn't, but it was kind of a brick wall for me. And I decided I did not want to go to a meeting, but I would go online, okay, and see if I can find the cliff notes to AA, you know, because I didn't really know what this was. I got into a chat room with a woman who had 90 days sober, and she told me her story. It was a Saturday night, and I remember thinking, I was supposed to go out and party that night, and I didn't, because she had told me her story. And, the next day I called in her group. I didn't really want to tell them where I lived. I kind of just gave, like, general cross streets. You know, I'm on, you know, this and this and this. And they're like, oh, yeah, there's a meeting right where you are on Wednesday. It's in the church basement on campus. So I was like, how did they know I was in school? So my first meeting was in the basement of a chapel on campus. There were three girls there, right around my age. You know, I was 21 at the time. Some folks were 19, 20, and 27. There was a middle-aged man who gave me his meeting book. And I remember looking at the woman with 7 years who was 27, and I remember thinking, like, why? Why would you want to go through your 20s not drinking? Like, I just didn't understand. And those women took me under their wing, and they told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was like, no. One, I don't even know if I'm an alcoholic. Two, I don't have time. Three, I don't have time. And they're like, well, you know, you should spend as much time, acknowledged 5 minutes. You should spend as much time on your sobriety as you did on your drinking. And I spent a lot of time drinking and recovering from drinking. And so I thought, you know, it's an easy one-to-one swap. I can do this thing. Also, I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic. So they're like, why don't you try 90 meetings in 90 days and let us know when you're done. I'm like, yeah, totally. I'm going to drink on 91. So that was the only thing that got me through 90 meetings in 90 days, because I had planned to drink on 91. 91 days came about, and I was bananas because I wasn't working a program. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have a home group, but I knew that life was better at 91 than it was like when I first came in. And you know, long story short, I found my way to the Atlantic group. I was about 100 days sober. I heard a fantastic share. I'm pretty sure it was Bonnie. And Bonnie said something like, if you, you know, there's a difference between someone who's hooked into AA and someone who's around AA. And I could acknowledge that I was just around AA. And I heard that to be hooked into AA, you have to have a home group, a sponsor, work the steps, read the big book, and have a service commitment. And I was doing none of those things. So I kind of sauntered over to the sponsorship chair at the time. And in my memory, I mean, I don't know if this is true. In my memory, she was blonde, had pearls, was wearing a black suit. And she was like, hi, how are you? And I'm like, no. But you know, I've heard people talk about seconds and inches in this room, and I was about to leave because she asked me a really complicated question, like, how are you? And I recall that she had reached out, grabbed my arm, and gave me her number. And she's been my sponsor ever since. Who knew? It's been a really wild 16 and a half years. I don't even know how to cram it all in. Needless to say, you know, doing the steps has, like, really just, I don't know, just radically changed and altered my life. You know, I did my fourth step. There was some stuff that happened to my family as a youth that, you know, I never thought I would get over. It was a terrible crime. I held on to it for years and years and years, and I didn't know that the fourth and fifth step could relieve me of that. I just didn't know. And, you know, moving on to, you know, steps 8 and 9, you know, I had been estranged from my family for a long time. It really depends on how you count it. I had sort of stopped living with my parents. I guess you can say when I was around 12. I started living with my sister. My sister and I were estranged. By the time I got to AA, and I was a year sober, I had not talked to my sister in 6 years. I had not talked to my family for that length of time. And so, you know, unfortunately for me, my father, my mother, and my sister were like the top three on my 9-step list. And my sponsor's like, okay, we're going to do them in order. I'm like, no, I don't. And I think my story in AA has been, you know, I heard a speaker say this, like, you don't have to like AA to get sober in AA. And every time AA asked me to do something, I always did it. I just didn't like it at the time. And so I'm grateful that, you know, like the speaker before me said, willingness doesn't always look like willingness. Like, it matters what my actions are. So, you know, I booked a flight, and I made amends to them, did living amends with them for a long time. Long time. You know, I called them once a week for a long, long time. And, you know, I guess where I am now, I have a great relationship with my sister. My relationship with my parents, you know, I wish it were different, but it's not. I pray for them. I think about them. That's probably the most I can do at this point in time. How I can be a family member to family members is I have wonderful in-laws, and I try to be the best daughter-in-law I can be to them. I have great mentors in my life. I try to be the best, you know, person in their life. I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of colleagues. I try to be of service to them. And these are all the things, 1 minute, understood. These are all the things I try to do in AA that I learned in AA. You know, I think I always was someone who cared about a higher power, who cared about being of service to others. But like, my drinking and my selfishness really obscured that. But I always knew it was there. I just didn't know how to access that. And I'm really grateful for the Atlantic Group and other groups that are, like, you know, I've heard people say pockets of enthusiasm. And but what does a pocket of enthusiasm mean? To me, it means a group that really cares about service and really cares about helping others. And probably on my own, maybe I might get there, but probably not as easily. And so I'm so heartened, and I absorb people's energy of service, and I hope to push that back out. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Spoken at a Zoom meeting, and I got to tell you, it's a little strange to speak to a bunch of black boxes. So anyone who wants to turn on the video, it's okay with me. I'm glad to see that the Atlantic Group is functioning the way it always has. I got a number of phone calls today explaining how I should be prepared and when I should be prepared and the time notifications that I am going to get. I appreciate the text messages from Rich telling me what I should wear, jacket and tie, the pants and the shirt I did on my own. So, it's nice to see that some things don't change. You know, the Atlantic Group has meant a lot to me over the years, and I'm truly grateful for it. As I said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which means that just for today, I don't drink, and I am a member in good standing. I have a sponsor. He is signed on somewhere. He was here. He's disappeared. I have sponsees. I have a home group. My home group is Chelsea Nooners. We meet every Tuesday and Thursday at noon, and everyone is welcome. We are also on Zoom. You know, it's amazing. I have a sobriety date. If I don't drink for the next 2 days, I will be celebrating 28 years. And, you know, that's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that you guys have taught me and more importantly, shown me over the years. So I'm truly grateful. Some of the big differences since I've seen most of you guys is a lot grayer hair. And without my glasses, I can't see who's in the boxes anyway, so it doesn't matter. I adore Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I have in my life that is of any value at all is due to my association with you guys. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. In the beginning, I thought I drank because I wanted to fit in. You know, friends were having a little drink. I was having a beer. They're having a beer. Screwdrivers. You know, that's something everybody knew. Orange juice and vodka, easy. And you know, we didn't know it was not supposed to be 50-50, but, you know, 50-50 worked out well. And very quickly, it changed. You know, my friends wanted to sneak a little beer and then go out and play. I wanted to sneak a little beer and then move on to the vodka. I wanted to sneak a little beer and then, move on to other things. I did not, alcohol was my answer. It made everything okay, even in those days. You know, I clean up good so I could fit in along those lines, but inside of myself, inside my own head, inside my own mind, I was always restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I wanted what you had, or I didn't want what you had, or I was just, it was always thinking, and it was always uncomfortable. And alcohol made that all go away, even at a young age. You know, at a young age, it didn't have a lot of consequences. I did silly, embarrassing things and, annoyed my father, but it didn't really have a whole lot of consequences. As time passed, it began to have consequences. I went out looking for colleges for my father, with my father one time. And we were driving down the coast. And I think one night I was out by the pool and some people said, hey, let's go out. And I came back at 4 o'clock in the morning. My father was sitting on the other bed in our hotel room with the bags packed. And we just drove back to New Jersey, no more colleges were visited. I began, as was mentioned earlier, doing things that I didn't plan on doing, ending up with people I wasn't planning on ending up with. But I just didn't care at that point. I,
was fortunate. I had good fortune. I got to go away to school, and they added dry goods to my story, which was always fun. But alcohol was always there. Alcohol was always the constant and always the steady. You know, the in reading the big book years later, it's interesting because I can see how I fit in. While I was there, I was just bumbling through everything. You know, I could see how Scott could drink scotch like a gentleman. I wanted that. So that was always my goal, you know. And I just wanted to, as my sponsor says, I just wanted to take the edge off. You know, as time progressed, I just wanted to take the edge off, but I always ended up going right past edge off to puke, you know, and it just repeated again and again and again, and I never got it. You know, I got sent away to school, and what that did for me, instead of offering a wonderful education, it introduced me to dry goods. How wonderful. I somehow got accepted at a college. And then, as we all know, all bets were off, and that's what I did. You know, I had so much opportunity in my life. I had people who loved me. I had people who cared for me. I had people who tried to give me what they didn't have in their life, and I just squandered it. I just drank. I was selfish. All I wanted to do was drink, and you know, nothing else mattered. And I could kind of see what was going on. I could see the disappointment. I could see the anger. I could see the sadness in people's faces. But the best solution for that was just to drink some more. You know, I didn't want to feel the feelings. I did not want to, be part of life at all. And the easiest way, rather than clean up what was in front of me, the easiest way was just to keep drinking. And, you know, as the big book talks about oblivion. Oblivion was definitely a goal for me. As I said, I clean up good. So, you know, by the end of my drinking, I was living in, you know, I had done all sorts of things. I had done all sorts of geographics, you know, not mindful of people. You know, I was hurting people I was renting from. Girlfriends, friends, whatever the case may be. But I ended up in Hastings, New York, which was convenient because, as you know, there are no alcoholics in Hastings. It's a nice place. You know, it's very respectful. And I wore a jacket and tie to work like I'm wearing now. And I had a little car. And so all of those qualifications, I could never be an alcoholic. The fact that I would wake up in the Pakasandra bush from time to time just seemed an odd thing. You know, the fact that I would wake up with somebody I wasn't sure who it was from time to time, you know, it just kind of happens, doesn't it? Happen to everyone. My car, I've come to know it as an alcoholic car. It, you know, it was a nice little Honda Civic, but it was rounded on all the corners. And my life in my apartment was very small. You know, it's by the end I had curtains staple gunned over my windows because I was unable to put up curtain rods. And, you know, I was not answering mail. I was not answering the phone. I remember looking out the window one sunny weekend afternoon and seeing the family next door. I rented in somebody's home, you know, and seeing the family next door getting ready for, some weekend travel. And I just wondered, how do they do this? How do they do that stuff? How do they manage? You know, I could do nothing at all. My world was becoming smaller and smaller. In the beginning, it made my world bigger. You know, it was Studio 54 and Xenon's and Roxy's Roller Disco, you know, and then I could talk to her and we could have all sorts of fun. And little by little, it just became smaller and smaller and smaller. Alcohol was no longer working. It was no longer saving my life, but I had an inability to stop drinking it. I just could not do it. I would get up in the morning and I'd say, today is going to be different. I swear today is going to be different. I'm just not going to drink. And then I'd get to work and you know, Sarah, who always drank with me, would say, hey, you know, let's go out for lunch. And, you know, we all know what that means, you know? And so you have a few drinks at lunch. And then, you know, because I could get away with it. I'd call into work and say, you know what, Sarah and I need to work some things out, and it would be just become a margarita afternoon and evening, and that's it. And that's the way it went. And, you know, like I said, my world became smaller and smaller. My family stopped inviting me over to the house. Things would disappear. You know, first it was simple things like bottles of wine and bottles of alcohol, and then, you know, it became cash. I somehow assumed that if my father left cash in the drawer, it was meant for everybody. And that's not true, by the way. And so my friends didn't want me around. I would be normal for a short period of time, and then I would just become disgusting, or I would pass out. None of those are really fun qualities to hang out with. And so my life got very small. I'm really grateful. I love the dogs in the picture here. I had a dog at that point, and she was the one thing that kept me doing anything normal and on a regular basis. Let's see. So I believe different, you know, both Scott and Christine talked about how they came into the rooms. I believe that I came into the rooms because you guys pray at the end of every single meeting. We hold hands. So when you pray, when we pray tonight, we're not holding hands, I know, but when we get back to normal life and we get to hold hands and we pray for the sick and suffering alcoholic, you know that it's true and know that it has some force. I didn't really know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about it. I think I had heard about it somewhere. But somehow I decided that if I was going to go out one last time, and if I couldn't make it work, I was going to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my deal was that you've heard the expression that the lights are on and nobody's home. For me, the lights were off and everybody was home. My head was just a cacophony of voices and, oh, you can't do this. You shouldn't do this. You should have done that. They shouldn't do this. And I just couldn't shut it off, you know, and in when alcohol was working for me, and it did for a while, for a long time, you know, I'd be able to drink, and, you know, all the voices would be shut off, and I'd be able to go back to a similitude of normal life, but that wasn't working any longer. You know, I just could not shut the voices off, no matter how blasted I got. I was just stuck in this, in my head. And so I somehow, because you guys prayed, I got some kind of divine intervention. And I said, if I don't, I'm going out this night. And if it doesn't work, if I can't shut off the voices, if I can't go back to normal, I'm going to go to one of those, you know, AAA meetings or ANA meetings, whatever I thought they were. And I had called up and I found out about a Thursday meeting. I never followed through on anything ever. I had a kitchen, you know, probably 10 feet by 10 feet in Hastings. And I had been trying for about a month and a half to paint the thing. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't follow through on the simplest things in life. And for some reason, I went out that night and I sniffed what I could sniff. I smoked what I could smoke. And I drank, you know, as I always drank. You know, I know that I was physically plastered, but my mind just wouldn't shut off. And for me, that's this quicksand. There was no place for me to go. I was, you know, pitiful and demoralized, and I had no idea what was going on. And so I somehow, for some reason, actually followed through and went to this meeting on Thursday. And it was over by the bus terminal in New York City. And I remember walking over there, and those guys passed out on the street. I think, you know, maybe I don't need this. I'm not like them, you know. And you know, I go into this meeting, and some guy runs over and hugs me and says, "Welcome." And I'm like, "Oh God, I'm in the wrong place. You know, this is not gonna work for me." I didn't have any capacity to say no, so I just kind of smiled. He brought me a half a cup of coffee, which kind of annoyed me, but I, you know, now I know why. You know, when you're shaking, you don't hand somebody a full cup of coffee. And I sat in this meeting, and all I wanted to do was leave. And the guy that was sharing a lot about drugs, but he did share a little bit about alcohol, and his story was very different than mine. You know, he talked about having his gold teeth and selling his fine leather coat for drug money, and that wasn't my story. But I could feel his isolation, I could feel his pain, and I knew exactly what was going on. And I sat where all good newcomers sit, in the back of the room. It just made it easier to cry, you know, and I just kind of looked down so nobody would notice. But I'm guessing the shaking and the smell probably gave it away. After the meeting, the same guy who came up and hugged me said, you know, we're having a meeting tomorrow. Why don't you come back to the meeting? You know, and again, everything in, you know, who are you? What do you want? Why are you asking me these things? And what I did is I said, yes, please. Thank you very much. You know, and this is God's grace to me. You know, I've had to do a lot of work in Alcoholics Anonymous, but the reason that I'm here is God's grace. This is the true example of God's grace to me. So I thank you, 15 minutes. I started going to this meeting, and Lou said to me, well, you're going to get a commitment to this meeting. It was back in the days of smoking. It was great. It was a small room, half smoking and half non-smoking. It was wonderful. You couldn't see anyone. It was truly anonymous. It was, and they wanted me to clean ashtrays. And what I wanted to say is, but you don't know who I am. You know, you want me to clean ashtrays? Look at me. I wear a suit to work. You know, and what I forgot to mention is that my suit was stapled together because I was too unable to figure out either how to sew it or go to a tailor. You know, I had zero capacity towards the end. I found out about the staples about 3 or 4 months into sobriety when they broke. There's nothing like having a staples in your crotch seam break in the middle of the day. It's very uncomfortable. So I took the commitment of ashtrays at this meeting. And, you know, I'm still, I think Peggy's word is mocus. I really have no idea. I'm just doing the next right action. I'm doing what you guys tell me. I'm glad the two speakers before me were wonderful. Thank you guys both very much. Christine, it's been so long since I've seen you. It's nice to see you. And your sponsor. I was just doing the next right thing. And that's why I know that this is God's grace, because I never did the next right thing. I just did the next easiest thing. I did, you know, what was easiest. I ran away. I hid, you know, I lied, I cheated, you know, and just dug my hole deeper. But for some reason, I just kept showing up. You know, that's all you guys told me to do is keep showing up. So they gave me ashtrays. And that meant that after the meeting, I went around and collected all the ashtrays, dumped them into a bigger can, and then cleaned the ashtrays. And, you know, grumbling and annoying, like Christine said, you don't have to be happy about it, but I did it. I didn't realize how happy I was about it until a few weeks later when another new guy came in and they wanted to give him half of my commitment. And it was crazy. So we're holding hands at the end of the meeting, and all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I got to get more ashtrays than this guy does. And yeah, I think one of my moments of clarity, there's so many in Alcoholics Anonymous, but one of my moments of clarity was sitting there holding hands and looking at this guy and knowing that the ashtrays could do for him what they did for me. Selfish people like me don't think things like that. You guys have taught me everything I need to know. So a couple months into this thing, Lou, it was a couple weeks into this thing. Lou comes up to me and says, after the meeting, hey, if you ever want to get drunk or high, give me a call. I'm like, dude, this is a meeting. What are you talking about? And I figured out what he meant. And so I asked him to be my sponsor. And that was wonderful. And I started calling Lou on a daily basis. And I'm not even sure what I talked about, but I called Lou on a daily basis because he asked me to. And then he said, we're going to start reading the big book. And I realized I'd made another mistake. I had no idea what he was talking about. I had no desire to work, you know, steps. I didn't know anything about it. I was just afraid, like everything else. I was afraid, and I didn't want to do it. So what I did was I got another sponsor. another guy named Lou. One was L-O-U, one was L-E-W. And being the upstanding person that I am, I didn't tell Lou one about Lou two. And so I went through my first year with two sponsors named Lou, calling them both, neither one knowing about the other one. At the meeting that I used to go to, your sponsor would give you a cake on your anniversary date. So that's when they found out. Both Lou's showed up to give me a cake at this meeting. And I thought my world was going to be over, but the fact is they laughed. They both laughed. And I'm really grateful. Alcoholics Anonymous, again, teaches me with everything that it does. You know, I've learned how to show up. I've learned how to be responsible. I've learned how to be respectable. With 2.5 years, I moved to California, where my sponsor is today, in Thousand Oaks. So very close to you. I'll be speaking at the Thousand Oaks meeting in a couple of weeks. Wonderful home group. People should check it out. If you text me later, I'll send you the information. And same kind of story. I had done steps 1, 2, and 3.5, and I just was zooming along through Alcoholics Anonymous like any good alcoholic. And I got there and got my current sponsor in kind of the same way that I got the other one. I came up to Bob after the meeting and I said, if you see Peter, please tell him I said hi. And he said, stick around and tell him yourself. I'm like, who does this guy think he is? And so the next day I asked him to be my sponsor. And that's when things changed. I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Bob talked to me about home groups. I never knew about home groups. Bob talked to me about steps, and he brought me through the big book. He, line by line, we read the big book and we did the steps together. And my life began to get clearer and cleaner. This was not a straight line. I've made a lot of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you guys have always shown me how to do it. So in the beginning, I was very grateful to be connected with Bob in Thousand Oaks group and the Pacific group in California. And I needed some brain cleansing and I needed some rules and some regulations. And that's what they gave me. And they gave me a wonderful training in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they gave me training in how to be responsible and respectable and how to clear up mistakes. 10 step tells me that I am not going to do this perfectly. And that's, 28 years, that's been the case with me. But I have a lot of tools to make it right as soon as I do something wrong. So I spent about 8 or 9 years in California, and my wife and I decided to move back to New York City. I got to study something in LA and then come back here to practice it in New York, which was wonderful, and I started going to the Atlantic Group. And my sponsor, Bob's best friend, was a guy called Van L., who is one of the co-founders of the Atlantic Group. Van became my sponsor for a number of years. He, for me, was the Atlantic Group. He really embodied everything. He practiced what he preached, and he, again, he didn't teach me by telling me to read a book. He didn't teach me by telling me about some vague philosophy. He taught me by doing. And this is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to follow the winners around in Alcoholics Anonymous. The winners aren't the ones with a gaggle of friends. The winners are the ones that are looking for the newcomer, the person they don't know. The winners are the ones who are cleaning up after a meeting, setting up before a meeting. The winners are the ones with the commitments. So I really adore Alcoholics Anonymous, all that you've given me and all that you've taught me. So Van was my sponsor up until when he died, and I had been speaking with Bob the whole time anyway, and so I just kind of gone back to Bob. What I've found over the years, last thing is, two more things, sponsoring others. In and of myself, I tend towards lethargy, I tend towards non-movement, I tend towards relaxing. I sponsor people. They want to go through the big book. That means I get to read the big book again and again and again and again. And every time I'm, oh, we have to read the big book, and I start reading it, my heart is filled and I learn something new. My sponsor talks about the little goblins who are always editing my big book so that each time I read it, there's new information in there for me. And the truth is that the different questions that people ask or the different insights that sponsees have taught me so much. You know, you'll hear people say in Alcoholics Anonymous that you get more than you give by sponsoring. And I've definitely found that to be true. In and of myself, I'm not going to do the effort. Because I sponsor people, I show up and I do what I'm supposed to do. And I get the benefit of that. 5 minutes. Thank you. That's beautiful. Lack of power is my problem. I got it. 5 minutes. Thank you. Lack of power is my problem, is what the big book tells me. You know, scotch was my problem, but scotch isn't my problem today. It's been a long time since I've had any scotch. Lack of power is my problem. And the way to connect to a power is a power greater than myself, is some form of God, whatever you want to call it. Alcoholics Anonymous has paved the way for me to do it. In over 28 years, if I don't drink in 2 days, but over 28 years, it's changed a lot, you know, and that doesn't matter. What it is, most importantly, is that this power is not me, and I'm very well aware of that. I clean up good. I'm well-educated. I'm smart, but I'm not a power greater than myself, 100%. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that. My life is very different than a lot of your lives. But the core of what allows me to have my life is exactly the same. My fear, my old tendencies are the same as all of yours, and the solution to the problem is the same of all of yours. I adore Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said in the beginning, every single thing in my life that's of value is due to my association with Alcoholics Anonymous. The promise that was made to me, and I almost left Bob as a sponsor when he told me this because I didn't know why somebody would want to lie to me like this. He said, I promise you that if you do the things that we do here at Alcoholics Anonymous, your life will get better, your life will change, and your life will get better. And I was really heartbroken when he said that, because so many people over the years had made promises and nothing had come true. Today, I tell you guys, if you do the things that we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you follow the winners, if you follow the people that are sponsoring and that are cleaning up and setting up, I promise you that your life will get better. You don't have to figure it out today. You don't have to know a special password except for Zoom meetings, but you don't have to know anything. You just have to show up and do what, you know, your sponsor and your friends do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do the steps, and I promise you that your life will get better. Thank you all so much for my sobriety.